just had a brief crisis, cut my finger, and I'm not sure when or how, and couldn't get stopped bleeding, so I had Gary and Darlene both running around trying to find me a Band-Aid real quick, so I didn't have to hold on to one tissue up here the entire time. So thankfully we got that done before the song ended. If you would, turn your Bibles to Mark chapter 4. We're going to be reading a verse from there here in just a few moments and kind of moving around a little bit. A few Wednesday nights ago, I spoke about the importance of maintaining our focus. And at the time, I had thought about doing this lesson tonight for a while. And I'll tell you in just a moment what made me think about why I wanted to do this lesson. But I didn't realize at the time that the focus lesson that I did and also Garland's lesson last Sunday night kind of go hand in hand with this. So it kind of just continuing a series of thoughts along the same line. But I talked about the importance of, you know, developing a mindset, setting our minds upon a goal that we have. And, you know, our ultimate goal, the goal that we talked about specifically, was reaching heaven. Tonight, or this afternoon, I guess, I want to talk about our commitment to a lifetime of serving God, serving the Lord. And when I was putting this lesson together, I told Emily, I said, I feel like I've preached on commitment here before. And she said, that's okay, they probably won't remember it. She said, I don't remember it, but maybe it was just that boring, I don't know. But it was about 3 years ago, and I did, but I talked about specific aspects of what we are committed to as Christians. Today I want to talk about being committed and remaining committed for a lifetime. Now, most of you know me in that I have a complete and utter disdain for all things UT athletics. So I guess we could chalk this up to the power of the gospel in that I'm going to use UT athletics in a good light tonight as an example for my lesson. If I say the name Inquiris Johnson, a few of you may have an idea who I'm talking about, very few, but if I call him by his nickname Inky Johnson, a few more of you may know who I'm talking about. He was a football player at the University of Tennessee. I think he played in 2005 and 2006. And he tells a story that at the beginning of his junior year, he was watching film in the film room preparing for an upcoming game against the University of California. And one of his coaches came in the room and said, Inky, I've got some good news for you. He said, all the scouts are projecting you to be a first-round draft pick. All you got to do is play these last 10 games, and you're set. Your family is, you know, set. Your financial future, you'll be a multimillionaire. Well, you can imagine his excitement when he heard that, so he immediately left the room, called his mother, and he told her. He said, Mom, guess what? He said, after this season, we're going to be set. Our lives are going to change forever. Now, I'm guessing none of you have ever heard of Inky Johnson, the NFL football player, and there's a good reason for that. His life did change forever. Just a few weeks later, in a game against the Air Force Academy, late in the game, he went to make a tackle. He was a defensive back. Went to make a tackle, and the way that he collided with the receiver on the Air Force caused the subclavian artery, I believe on his right side, to tear. Now that artery goes from your heart up around your collarbone and it supplies the blood flow to your arm, to each arm, the subclavian artery. He had torn that. They had rushed him to the hospital and the doctor told him, said, you know, we're going to have to perform emergency surgery here. We're going to have to take a vein, the main vein from your leg, and we're going to have to put it inside of this artery. And if we don't do this, you're going to die. You're bleeding internally. Your life's going to be over. After the surgery was over, it was a successful surgery, the doctor came to him and and told him, he said, you've got nerve damage in your right arm. You're never going to be able to play football again. You know, how devastating would that be? You've got this great future ahead of you, and this one freak accident happens, and it's gone. Just like that. And you can imagine he's a 20-year-old man. He doesn't want to take that for an answer. He says, come on, Doc, you know, send me to the Mayo Clinic. You know, there's nowhere better than that. Send me there. So they did. They sent him there, and the surgeons there told him that he had a few surgery options. They said, we can take some muscle from your left leg, put it in your right arm to build that up, but chances are you'll have a weak left leg and a weak right arm for the rest of your life. He said, another option, we could take a nerve from your left arm, reroute it over to your right arm, so you'll have a nerve there, but you might end up with two lame arms. He said, a third option is we can take a nerve from one of your left ribs, we can reroute it, and this is amazing to me that we can reroute nerves from one part of the body to another, but we can reroute that to your right arm, but there's a good chance you're going to end up with breathing problems for the rest of your life and still have a lame right arm. And they gave him one night to think that over, and the next morning he had to tell them what his choice was. I don't really know exactly what his choice was. He just said, do what you got to do. Don't know what that entailed, but he said that they cut him across his left thigh, across his chest, below his rib cage, on his right side. They cut down both sides of his neck, and then they cut from his armpit all the way down to his wrist for this surgery. And surgery again, successful surgery. And after the surgery, they told him, you're going to be in this hospital for 40 days for recovery. On the third day, Inky Johnson walked out of that hospital, and they told him, they said, that's the fastest anyone's ever left after a surgery like this. And I don't know if that was a good decision or not, but that's what he did. They asked him how he was able to do it. And so his response was, I will never let a circumstance or situation define my life. I've invested far too much to let this stop me. I've been working my whole life for this. He was determined to chase something. He said that he had learned how to be committed to it and what it meant to be committed, what commitment is. He said, you think commitment is just saying, yes, I'll do it. And this is the quote here that really got me thinking about doing this lesson. He said, but what commitment is staying true to what you said you were going to do long after the mood that you said it in has left you. Just think about that for a minute. Commitment is staying true to what you said you were going to do long after the mood which you said it in has left. He says people think that commitment is just saying, yes, I'll do it on the days that they feel good. But he said commitment is when on the days that you don't feel like doing what you said you would do, you get up and you do it anyways. He said that's what builds character. He said, by staying committed to what I had started, it built a spirit within me, a mentality to where I couldn't quit, even if I wanted to. I had too much invested in my goals to just give up and quit. I needed nothing more to get motivated and keep going than having breath in me, in my body, and just having life. I thought that was a very powerful thing that he said, something that should motivate. And you can find this, parts of that speech, and he's done a lot, he's a motivational speaker, but parts of these speeches, the videos are available online. You can look up Inky Johnson, how they add, like, you know, music behind it to really get you pumped up, like, you know, thematic elements to it. But the message behind it, is what's important. You know, typically when we commit to something in life, you know, typically it's going to be done in a spirit of excitement or enthusiasm, hope of what we think, whatever we're committing to, will turn out to be. This coming up Wednesday is the early national signing day for high school football players to sign, to commit for the next 4 years to play at whatever and to go to school hopefully, at whatever college that they've chosen that is, has offered them. Thing is, many of these young men made commitments months or even years ago to go to a certain school. Now, they made these commitments, you know, again, in a period of excitement. The coaches got them excited. They saw the atmosphere of the school, the atmosphere at the game, the people, the players that they were going to get to play with when they their future teammates. But over time, some of that excitement wears off. Coaches may leave. Players may leave. Things change. And they call it decommitting. There's one player, there's one athlete, high school athlete. I think he's committed five or six times now to different schools. His current commitment is to the University of Tennessee. It's the third time he's committed there. I don't know why they even call it commitment. It's not a commitment. You're just saying, yeah, I think I might do this, and until they sign the paper, there is no commitment. But it's that excitement, that initial excitement, that's what gets them wanting to go to a certain place. Other schools will offer them scholarships, try to get that same excitement so they can flip their commitment. Think about when children beg their parents for a pet. And you see this on TV all the time. I don't guess we ever had to. We just had a pet, dogs, growing up. We didn't have to beg for it. But, you know, they're like, please, please, can we have this dog or can we have this cat? And what's the question that the parent always asks? Well, are you going to take care of it? Are you going to feed it? Are you going to water it? Are you going to clean up a mess, you know, whatever? Oh, yeah, 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 we'll do all that. How long does that last? Unless the parents really, you know, enforce that, it usually doesn't last very long. And who ends up being stuck with taking care of the pet? The parents, right? Mature enough, dedicated enough to make a commitment to taking care of an animal. You know, ask yourself, why are divorce rates so high? I think we know the answer to that. We have two people. They fall in love. And they have these grandiose visions of how perfect life is going to be once they get married. And you find out pretty quick, life's not perfect when you get married. You got two imperfect people. It's not going to be perfect. On the wedding day, vows are exchanged. You know, we'll, you know, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, sickness and in health, you know, till death do us part. They make that commitment, that vow. It doesn't always last, does it? Things get tough. You know, sickness does come. I have two patients at work that they're sisters. It's just terrible. But they're sisters, and they both, over the years, have been diagnosed with cancer. And both of them, their husbands left them for other women when they were diagnosed. I'm sure we all know people who like that, but both of them, their husbands left when they became sick. They didn't live up to that commitment. They were excited, you know, they were in love, blinded by love, excited, exchanging those vows. But they, you know, they didn't stay true to what they said long after the mood they had set it in had left them. They're not willing to put forth the effort required to keep that commitment. Becoming a Christian. You know, many people decide to put on Christ during a period of high emotion. And I always think back to growing up going to Camp Kennessee. They'd wake us up sometimes in the middle of the night saying, so-and-so's going to get baptized. Everybody's, you know, either you're so delirious from not sleeping the whole week, and that adds to this, but there's a lot of excitement in that, and we would all go to the swimming pool, and they would be baptized, and then another person would decide to, and another, before you knew it, you had a dozen or more people being baptized. In the middle of the night, when they're tired, their emotions are running high, you know, it's a very emotional atmosphere when that's happening. But once that wears off, once you leave, once you're out of that, you know, what are you left with? Go back home, go back to the real world. Things aren't so easy. You're not in an environment where you're around 300 other people that are desiring to serve the Lord 24/7. Some of these did leave the Lord. Some didn't last very long at all because the mood they had set it in, they forgot. They forgot why they had made that commitment. So many outward influences seek to pull us away from our commitments. Jobs, recreation, family, it could be any number of things. We may value that extra hour of sleep Sunday morning. Just come to worship. Don't have to come to Bible class. We spend countless hours watching TV or surfing the internet while our Bibles sit collecting dust. And then we wonder, why am I not growing? Why am I not becoming a better Christian? Why am I not learning as much as I ought to? And these aren't quick changes that happen, typically. We slowly drift. As we studied in Hebrews, we slowly drift away. We forget how excited we were when we put on Christ. That zeal, that fire we had when we first became a Christian. Till we reach the point where we've completely drifted away. If you read self-help books or articles that you can find, they give three different aspects of, or three different keys to staying committed to a goal. And that's what I want to focus on for the last bit of our lesson tonight. Those three keys are sacrifice, purpose, and determination. And if you think about it, life in the modern world, we're programmed to, things are just easy, right? We expect everything to just be easy for us. We not only expect it to be easy, but we expect to not have to do anything to obtain rewards. If it requires effort or time, probably not worth it, right? Easier for somebody just to do it for us, have it done for us. Many people seek to obtain things illegally. They just installed lottery machines at all the Freds. And oh man, people are just flocking in. I'd never even seen these machines before. I guess I'm just sheltered from it because I don't go into gas stations. But just left and right, they're seeking a quick way to make a buck. And I don't know if they fill the machines with winning cards in the beginning or what, but it seems like everybody's won so far, and they're all telling everybody else about it. It'd be a pretty smart idea on the part of the lottery. But there's get-rich-quick schemes out there. You hear about them all the time. You don't have to be on the internet very long. Get on Facebook, and 50 of your friends are saying, hey, join this thing, join this thing. You can make $1,000 overnight. Things don't happen, but people are always gullible, falling for those because they're looking for an easy way out. Think about athletes using steroids or performance-enhancing drugs. Russia isn't even allowed to compete in the Olympics coming up because they were caught doping so much in the last Winter Olympics. But so often we seek whatever shortcuts we can to have as much as we can without putting forth any real effort. Couples, we talked about marriage is not lasting. What do couples do now? They don't even get married, right? You don't have to make a commitment. You just live together. If it doesn't work out, then you can just go your separate ways and everything's okay, right? It doesn't matter. People come to us all the time at work. What have you got for weight loss? You got a magical pill for weight loss? No, we don't. If we did, wouldn't everybody be on it and you'd know about it, right? There's not one. They don't want to make healthy lifestyle choices. They want the short way out. They don't want to make the sacrifice. The sacrifice is necessary to be healthy. But sacrifices have to be made in order for us to achieve goals in life. Our ultimate goal is heaven. We've got to make sacrifices in this life in order for us to achieve that goal. There's no shortcuts on the path to heaven. There's just not. We've got to ask ourselves, am I going to stand by my commitment even if it's going to interrupt other aspects of my life, if it's going to keep me from obtaining things that I want, doing things that I want? Several of you know that, before I graduated pharmacy school, I worked for Walgreens, and working for them, thankfully, when I wasn't a pharmacist, I didn't have to work. I was able to work it out where I didn't have to work Sundays or Wednesdays. But as a pharmacist, you don't have that option. I was blessed to be able to find an opportunity with a company that doesn't require me to work Sundays or Wednesday nights. I make quite a bit less money. My benefits are less. But to me, it's completely worth it. You know, sacrificing my family's financial stability now and definitely in the future, it's worth it to show my kids, you know, it's important for me to be here, to be with you, to be with you, worshiping our God together. You know, we need to show where our priorities are. You know, we sacrifice our time, our money, our possessions, to help others in serving them and in serving God. And we've got to remember, giving up something in this life pales in comparison to the reward that we're going to obtain in heaven, the eternal rest with God. And also to remember that this life is not about what we want, but about what God wants us to do, what we're commanded to do by Him. Secondly, is purpose. You're probably wondering, is he just going to talk and never read any scripture? It's coming. We've got several verses here. I think this is the longest I've gone into a lesson without reading any scripture, but it's coming. So when we have a mission or a goal, we've got to have meaning. We've got to have purpose behind it, right? Whatever we're pursuing, purpose and, you know, passion, they kind of go hand in hand, right? It's what motivates us each and every day to take up our cross and to follow Christ, to serve God. Without a purpose, you're not going to sustain your commitment. You've got to have, you know, they talk about the purpose-driven life. I'm sure you all have seen the book out there. I talked about the Winter Olympics that are coming up soon. You know, this happens once every 4 years. And these athletes have been training, some of them a lot longer than just 4 years, for maybe just one event. But they have a purpose in mind. They have a goal in mind. They want to win that gold medal, right? Some of these people have won, you think to the Summer Olympics, Michael Phelps had won gobs and gobs of medals. Did that stop him from doing it again? When somebody wins something, you know, a team wins a championship, they just say, well, we won a championship, that's good enough for me. No, their purpose, they have a purpose. They want to continue to win. They want to continue to strive for their best. They're driven by that. Jesus had a very specific purpose in his work on earth. And that's, did I say Mark 4? I meant John 4. John 4. In verse 34, it says, Jesus said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. And then you go over to chapter 17 and verse 4. It says, I glorified you, you as in the Father, on the earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do. Jesus' purpose on earth was what? It was to do God's will and to glorify Him. What should our purpose be on earth? To do God's will and to glorify Him, just the same as Christ was. Our purpose should not be any different than the purpose that Christ set forth. Obviously, He had a different purpose. He came to save the world. But He's taught us what God's will is. So that should be our purpose, is to follow it and to glorify Him by doing His will. Last is determination. Another quote from Inky Johnson was, you're going to hit things in life that are a lot tougher than you, and it's going to test your will and test your heart. You know, we've all been through some or all of these that I'm going to mention, but you know, the longer we live, the more of these we're going to face them. You know, we'll face, you know, death of loved ones or close friends, family, those around us. We'll lose our jobs. We'll lose our health. Our ability to do things will wane. Just enjoying life can become less and less, you know, as we get older and our bodies deteriorate. But we've got to be determined to overcome whatever these roadblocks are, whatever trials we face in life. You know, we've got to accept these trials. James chapter 1, right? We just talked about this a couple of weeks ago in class. These are growth opportunities. We've got to be determined to come out on the other side stronger, more mature, more complete, more perfect than we were when we went in. Think about Peter. All four of the Gospels record his account of denying Christ. But he was adamant that he wouldn't do it, right? In Mark chapter 14, that's where I had Mark from. Mark 14, just after the Passover meal, where Christ had instituted the Lord's Supper, he and the apostles went away to the Mount of Olives. And in verse 27, he says, "And Jesus said to them, 'You will all fall away, because it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. But after I've been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee.'" And here's Peter, putting his foot in his mouth right here. He says, "Even though all may fall away, yet I will not." Jesus said to him, "Truly I say to you that this very night, before a rooster crows twice, you yourself will deny me three times." But Peter kept saying insistently, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And they all were saying the same thing also. We often forget that it wasn't just Peter that said this, but Peter's the one, we're going to see in just a moment, that went on and messed up. Now, he was fired up. He had zeal. He's, you know, "I'm with you, Jesus. I'm with you. You know, I'll die for you." Christ knew he wouldn't. Shortly after this, Christ was arrested. He was taken before the high priest for questioning. Peter followed behind. You know, he was staying in the courtyard and keeping warm by the fire. And picking up in verse 66 of chapter 14, it says, "Peter was below in the courtyard. One of the servant girls of the high priest came, and seeing Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, 'You also were with Jesus the Nazarene.' But he denied it, saying, 'I neither know nor understand what you were talking about.' And he went out onto the porch, and the rooster crowed. The servant girl saw him and began once more to say to the bystanders, 'This is one of them.' But again he denied it. And after a little while the bystanders were again saying to Peter, 'Surely you're one of them, for you're a Galilean too.' But he began to curse and swear, 'I do not know this man you are talking about.' Immediately a rooster crowed a second time. And Peter remembered how Jesus had made the remark to him, 'Before a rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times.' And he began to weep." See, Peter let the circumstance define him. He didn't stay true to what he said he was going to do long after the mood he said it in and left. He was fired up. But when things got tough, his commitment fell apart. Peter was determined, but he lost his focus when an obstacle got in his way. He valued his life. In 2 Corinthians 12, 7 through 10, we have Paul talking about the thorn in the flesh. He calls it a messenger from Satan. He says, "Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me. But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I'm well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I'm strong." We don't know for certain what this thorn was. There's a lot of speculation as to what it was, but we know that it greatly bothered Paul. We know that he received it to keep from exalting himself, so that he would stay humble. It bothered him so much that he asked God to remove it three times, but God allowed it to remain. So Paul didn't receive the answer he was looking for, right? What did God tell him? He told him that his grace was sufficient for Paul, and that his, God's, strength is made perfect in weakness. For Paul, this was a defining moment. He could have let the circumstance define him, right? He could have said, "I give up. You know, this is too much. I can't handle it." He could have wallowed in self-pity because God didn't give him what he wanted. But how did he respond? He said, "I will boast in my infirmities." You know, rather than bemoan these circumstances, he gloried in them. He had the opportunity to experience the power of Christ in his life. as Christ helped him to deal with them. You know, reread verse 10 again. He says, I'm well content with weaknesses, insults, distresses, persecutions, difficulties for Christ's sake. For when I'm weak, then I'm strong. All these things, they can be a time for rejoicing. You know, Romans 5:3 tells us, tribulations produce perseverance. This is that, you know, that perfection, that maturity, again, that, the completeness that James talked about being produced from facing these various trials. You know, count it all joy, brethren. Let's think back to Peter and the apostles for a moment. They committed themselves to not deny Christ, even to the point of death. Peter failed in the rest of the story, right? But ultimately, he didn't fail in that. We, as far as we know, most, if not all, of the apostles did commit themselves to Christ, even to the point of death. History tells us some of the gruesome, brutal ways that they were killed. So they did follow through with that. Now, they obviously learned so much more when they were given the Holy Spirit, and they understood better. And it wasn't from that moment, necessarily, that them promising that they would do that. But they did commit themselves to Christ even to the point of death. There's the sacrifice. In 1 Corinthians 2, 1 and 2, Paul wrote, And I, when I came to you, brothers, did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And Paul's not saying that that's all he was going to teach them. He obviously taught them many other things we know from reading in both of the letters to the Corinthians. But the central importance of Paul's message everywhere he went was the cross of Christ and the redemption that it brings, the salvation that we have because of it. There's his purpose. So back to Inky Johnson, we finish up here. Only 1 week after that surgery that he was told he had to be in the hospital for 40 days, he was back in class at school just 1 week later. He had to learn how to write all over again. He had to learn how to walk. He had to learn how to tie his shoe with one hand. He had to learn how to live his whole life over all over again in a completely different way. But he says, I never once said, let me go home. I need a break. I can't handle this. He says he saw his suffering as a blessing by God. He said, you know, it's a blessing from God, and when you're blessed by God, you've got to give it everything that you've got. Well, our life is a blessing from God, right? Christ, the greatest blessing we've received. Shouldn't we give it everything we've got? In one of the videos that I had seen of him talking, you know, he's standing up there giving a speech, and his left hand, you know, he can move it. He can talk with it great. But his right arm, it's just... I mean, he's a pretty muscular guy. His right arm is about as skinny as mine is. I mean, there's no muscle tone to it. It's just kind of dangling there. And he's got it wrapped up in this white sleeve, so you can't see it. But he rolls that sleeve up there, and he says, look, this is what's left of my arm. He says that the last doctor, at his last doctor visit, his doctor told him, he said, Inky, I'm sorry, that you're never going to be able to use this hand and this arm again for the rest of your life. And Inky's response is one that I think we can all learn a lesson from. He said, no disrespect, Doc, but I'm going to use this arm and this hand every day of my life. For the rest of my life, by the way that I live my life, every day I'm going to impact someone's life. Every day I'm going to empower someone. Every day I'm going to inspire someone. And every day I'm going to encourage someone. That's determination. That's the determination that propelled him. He's a very successful motivational speaker now. Successful. He's a husband and father. And he's dedicated his life to showing what commitment is to others. To have hope. Don't give up. You know, bad things are going to happen to us. Satan is trying to cause our commitment to waver. Each and every day. He's trying to hit us when we're low. He can hit us when we're high. But he's always trying to take us down. No. But the question we've got to ask ourselves tonight is, what's holding you back from being committed? Either from making the commitment or staying committed, we've got to ask ourselves, what's holding you back? Are you waiting for the perfect moment to come? You know, how many people, I have a coworker who said this yesterday, how many people are waiting for after the holidays to start a diet? You know, I can't diet yet because Christmas is still coming, you know. They committed to a diet in the fall and said, well, Thanksgiving's coming. Well, now Christmas is coming. How many are going to stay committed beyond a week or two to that diet anyways? Probably not many. If you're waiting for that right moment in your life to become committed, it's never going to happen. There's always going to be a roadblock. There's always going to be an obstacle. There's always going to be something in your way to keep you from being committed unless you dedicate yourself. You make the sacrifice. You decide that you have a purpose and you're determined to see it through. You know, you have to decide, you know, am I going to live my life the way that I want to? Or am I going to live my life the way that God wants me to? There's no greater cause to commit yourself to or recommit yourself to than the cause of Christ. There's no cause that has a greater reward for remaining committed to it for a whole lifetime. You know, we sing the song, heaven will surely be worth it all. No matter what we face in this life, no matter what brings us down, we stay committed. We've got that eternal rest, that eternal reward in heaven with Christ and with God and the saints forever. So make that decision now. Why don't you come now as we stand and we sing.